come join the conversation, the show that you've been wanting. Keep it real with no filter, weekly we share discussions. WWSD, interviewing creative guests, talking the creative process and sharing all the influences from TV and film. Emmy nominated and winning, yeah, they coming through. Actors and comedians too, directors and writers, way more than a few. Masters of their craft, yes, tune in, you gotta see. This the podcast that you need, WWSD.
Welcome to the WWSD podcast. Weekly, we share discussions with interesting and creative people. I'm your host, Josh, and as always, I'm joined by my buddy and co-host, Seamus. How's it going, Seamus?
It's going wonderfully. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Yeah. So who do we have on tonight?
Tonight, we have a very, very special guest. We are joined by film and television composer, Jeff Cardone. Jeff has worked on many epic shows like Silicon Valley, The League, CSI Miami. He's also composed and created songs for many feature films and television shows with way too many to list. It's a really impressive IMDb. Jeff, it's an absolute pleasure and honor having you on our podcast tonight. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. How are you guys?
Yeah, thanks for coming out. We're doing great, man. So can you just give our listeners a little bit of your background and how you got started in composing and in the industry?
Yeah, blind luck, really. Yeah. I spent, when I was a kid, my parents forced me to play piano and I played drums and bands in high school. But I never thought I'd have a career being a musician. But then after college, I was playing in some bands and I was a guitar player then, and I wanted to be a famous guitar player. So I moved to DC and spent some few years in some indie bands down there. And then I moved to LA, got in a band out here as a hired guitar player. It was a band called Alien Crime Syndicate. They were assigned, but I was pretty much just a hired gun, you know, and it's at that point I kind of realized that wasn't for me, being a hired guitar player. So I had some friends out here. My band's old manager was, it's called a music supervisor, which is someone who picks the songs in movies and TV shows, and they kind of oversee all the music. So he kind of exposed me to this whole other facet of the business that I didn't really know existed. And I was like, that was kind of seemed like where I really wanted to try to get into. I took some classes at UCLA and just kind of tried to give a go of it. And that was like in 98 or 99.
So had you any experience composing up until that point?
Not really. No. You know, I mean, just doing stuff at home.
Yeah. You were probably well-versed in music theory, like being a classical pianist, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But I didn't appreciate it. Yeah. I didn't. I hated it by the end. You ever see the movie Shine? You remember the movie Shine with Jeffrey? That was kind of like my childhood. And I never understood why my parents were forcing me to do that, because they didn't want me to be a musician. So I did have that. And I didn't realize that I had that bass that really came in handy after. Especially I took some orchestration classes and stuff at UCLA. And that's when I was like, reading music and stuff, I came in handy. And then it was just blind. I didn't really have any big connections or trying to how to get a gig, you know.
How did you finally get your first gig? How did that come about?
Well, I did like a bunch of short films and things like that. I had some friends who were in a band I moved out here with. They went on to become music supervisors. So when we got here, when I was like, I'm going to go try to figure out how to be a composer, and they were going to go try to be music supervisors. And we all kind of like started at the same time. And so eventually, so I kicked around for a few years. I would go to AFI, which is an American Film Institute, and hang up flyers saying composer looking for your film for free and stuff like that. Pretty much any, because the internet was just kind of getting started then. It wasn't, you know, so it was harder. You had to do stuff physically. And the Hollywood Reporter every Tuesday would have like a listing of all the movies and shows in production. It had all the big stuff. It had all the independent stuff. So I would just look for anything that had no one that I knew in it. Because anything that you did had like a famous person was too big, you know? So I tried to find the most anonymous junk, and then I would just like mail them CDs and cassettes and stuff. I got a couple little short films out of it, but nothing too much. I was just kind of flying blind for like 4 or 5 years. But then I guess in like 2001 or something, one of the guys who went to become a music supervisor got the job on the first CSI. He was an English guy, this guy named Jason Alexander. So he was a music supervisor. He was good friends with Danny Cannon, who directed the pilot and was a producer. At that time, I was almost out of money and I was almost ready to pack it in. You know, I was getting older and I didn't know what I was going to do. So I was living in like disgusting hotel down by the airport in the parking lot of a strip club. I was pretty close to being gone. So this guy calls me, he's like, hey, there's a studio that opened up next to my office in Santa Monica. you should consider coming over there because there's a lot of people coming in and stuff, blah, blah, blah. But I was broke, but I got like a cash advance on a credit card. And I was like, all right, I'm going to give myself a few months. So I moved into that studio. Probably a month after I got in there, he came in and said, hey, they're doing a short film. The DP on CSI was making a short film. Do you want to try to score it? So I said, yeah, absolutely. So I scored it. And so Danny Cannon, the EP and director, he saw that and he thought it was pretty good. But I didn't think anything of it. They did the spinoff of CSI, which was CSI Miami. And for the first season, they had Graham Revell, who was like a big A-list film guy at that point. He did The Crow. He did so many, like he was big. But for some reason, Graham was leaving the show after like the eighth episode. So on like a Friday, they came in. Jason said, hey, they're going to be looking to replace Graham. You want to take a shot and make it a demo? I was like, sure. You know, I mean, they're not going to go from Graham to me. But anyway, so in those days, we were using VHS tapes still. You know, it wasn't even DVDs then. So we all did an episode over the weekend. And somehow, from what I heard, is they watched your tape with no names on it, which for me was a huge benefit because, you know, I was nobody. And so they picked me. And that was my big break.
That's awesome.
Getting CSI Miami. Yeah. I mean, I remember sitting in the Denny's parking lot by the strip club in the airport, getting the call. It was like one of those life-changing moments, you know.
I bet that felt that's great.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, it's terrifying still, but yeah.
So when you scored that episode though, like, were you really trying or did you like, oh, this isn't gonna go anywhere? Like, what was the kind of your mindset for that?
I mean, yeah, probably a little of both. Yeah, I thought there's no way in hell I was gonna get it. So there's something freeing about that, you know, because you just
don't care.
Yeah. So probably there's a looseness to that where I just did whatever the hell I wanted. There's no way I'm gonna get it anyway. So probably ignorance worked to my advantage in that case.
During that 5-year period, you know, clawing, trying to get ahead, like what kind of things were you creating and like how was that for you?
I was trying to learn how to do it, you know, because like composer, there's so much, you have to wear so many hats, especially early on, because like you don't have a team of people. You have to write the music, you have to produce the music, you have to perform it, you have to mix it. You kind of have to do all that stuff. So I was kind of like trying to figure that all out too by trial and error, you know. I would try to write something every day. Also in the beginning, like I had all my band songs, but I didn't have like a pool of music to pull from, you know? So if you get a shot to put a demo to pitch on something, I had to have a batch of music that I could pull something together for, you know, which that's hard in the beginning. And back then it was harder to have stuff that sounded good too. You know, like now you can get a MacBook and GarageBand and everything sounds pretty good, but it was harder to get it of like acceptable quality back then. There was a big difference from a demo to the final thing, where now there's not that much of a difference. I was trying to just learn how to do that stuff. So if you ever happen to get an opportunity that could kind of try to capitalize on it.
You play guitar and piano. Were you a multi-instrumentalist when you started composing, or is that something you had to teach yourself too?
No, I was, and that really helped. But the weird thing is, like, at that time, it wasn't cool to be a guy from a band trying to be a composer, you know, like besides like Danny Elfman, or it was kind of, you know, there was definitely a line from like band guys to like legit composers, you know, and they can do all the orchestral stuff. So I purposefully didn't put a guitar on anything for probably 5 years because I thought it would be like, oh, he's just a band guy. And that was probably a mistake because I think then for me, I thought you had to emulate. So I did my bad John Williams and my bad Jerry Goldsmith, you know, and it's just not a good thing. It's better to be me than try to be a bad imitation of someone else.
So after CSI Miami, did kind of the world open up to you at that point, or were you still having to fight for quite a bit?
Oh, no, it never opened. It still hasn't opened up. I don't know. I think you talk to anyone in this business, it's always hard. Feast or famine, or, you know, you get on a little run and then you get knocked down to reality real quick 2 weeks later. You know, you just, at least for me, I've never had that period where it's like, oh, finally I'm here. No, I mean, Miami was nice because that went for a bunch of seasons. So that made all the other dips.
Did they lock you in for multiple seasons, or was it like a season by season thing?
You can be let go every episode, the way they write their contract.
Yeah, it's brutal.
But like every summer, they would pick up your option for the next year. So that was always like a big relief. Like, oh, thank God, I have a job for another year, you know? No, I mean, during that time, I did a bunch of indie films. And then a couple of years after I got my first big studio film, I got this film called Just Friends, which was Ryan Reynolds and Amy Smart. Yeah, it was great. And that was my first, that was for New Line. And that was my first time with like a live orchestra on a film. And that was a big deal too for me at the time.
What is the process like when you're composing for a film? Like how do you go through those iterations?
I mean, they're all different, but yeah, I mean, you usually start on the piano for me just to kind of come up with like a tune or what your idea of it would be. Try to stay away from the computer for a while because otherwise I feel like it's too easy to get sucked into like the sound. It's easy to make stuff sound good, but like if there's no content to it, if there's no music, if there's no notes, it sounds good, but so I always try to like sit at the piano and come up with some kind of idea first.
Do you get notes from a director or something to start out, like, you know, like the kind of feeling that they're going for? Or is this something where you're reading a script or watching the film and then just figuring it out for yourself?
It depends. I mean, on the lower budget independent stuff, you have a little more freedom, like, because what they do when they're making a movie, as they're editing it, doing the whole process, they'll put in what's called temp music, whereas as they're cutting it and they'll throw in music from other movies. For a composer, it's kind of a problem a lot of times because then by the time you get the movie, unless you started before they did any of that, but that's pretty rare, they've got their movie temped with the best sounding greatest hits of all film music. So you just get this thing and you're just like, Jesus Christ, what am I going to do? You know, and you're sitting
there. How do I top that?
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, they don't temp it with bads. They temp it with finished full orchestra, you know, like everything that you've ever heard. So that's extremely daunting because your first job is to get them to forget about that. So there's always that when you do your first batch of music on a film, it's like, all right, you invite the director over and you have to play them your first version. And it's like ripping off the Band-Aid. You know, they might have been sitting in the room editing this for 6 months to a year sometimes. So they're like so used to hearing what they're used to hearing. It's rough. So you have to play the first thing. And it's, I mean, sometimes you get lucky and they like it, but a lot of times it's like, that's different, but you got to get that. You got to clear their head of it. And they all say that they don't care about it, but it's in their head, you know? So it's hard. Job number one is to get them to forget about that, because then you can start approaching it your way.
What's it like trying to communicate with somebody who might not have the language to speak in music? You know, like when they're trying to tell you what they want, you know, or they're trying to give you notes or try to like communicate what they want in their film. Like, what's it like trying to bridge that gap of communication?
Oh, I mean, I think it's better when they don't know music because you just listen to what they're saying. You can tell from the body language. You can tell from
because they're like, oh, just make it sadder kind of thing.
Yeah, they can tell by their words. You know, your job is to kind of decipher what they're not getting out of it and try to figure out how to turn it into music. No, I find it fascinating, you know, because I find it their reaction always kind of gives you a clue of what is wrong. And that's the other hard thing is getting their confidence in the beginning so you're not afraid to make mistakes, you know, because so much of the whole process is trial and error, you know, it's experimenting, it's being creative. It's like, because there's a million different ways any scene could be scored, but it's not being comfortable not to play it too safe the first time to try something. And that's hard. But once you get that confidence of them that you're not afraid to take a shot, even if it's wrong, like even if you maybe they had it temped with Star Wars and you come in and do something with guitar. And even if that's not the right approach, that might lead you to something that's a cool approach that's far away from where they started and not where you started either. But it's a process and it's fun.
That's interesting that like reading their emotions kind of gives you information about like what emotions to put into the music.
Yeah. And it's interesting, different if the director is a writer too. Those are the hardest ones because if it's just a director, then they know what they want the scene to look like or what they want you to feel there. But the writer knows like every word that was said and what that's, you know what I mean? And how that's coming out. And so that's a whole other layer of you really got to get in there. And interestingly, it's the hardest on comedies, I think, because if a director writes a comedy, like every word is so honed, you know, like every word has purpose. There's no filler dialogue in a comedy that the director wrote. And it's pretty cool. I mean, it's fascinating. So you kind of just have to sit back and listen to them and listen to what they say and just kind of translate, just trying to get in their head. It's cool. I mean, I'm blown away like by writers, and it's funny, like I never really thought about it, but like all the writers out here are like Ivy League. They're not dummies, you know. Like you think sometimes you think, oh, this is a comedy. These guys are like genius people, and it's really pretty fascinating. fascinating.
With the filler music, do they give you like a lot of like leeway, or like they're saying make it sound like Star Wars? How much are they giving you?
It's different every time. I mean, I've been pretty fortunate where I haven't been forced to, like, people will say, you know, to emulate the temp or rip off the temp or like, yeah, like I haven't been really encountered that too much, which is nice. I know guys who do it, but it doesn't sound like what we have. And they just keep forcing them to keep going back and make it till they're basically like, if it's Star Wars, if it's da-da-da-da-da-da, these people are da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Like, I've never, you know what I mean? It's like, everyone knows where that came from. And that would be horrible to have to do that. I've been pretty lucky to not have to do that, because I don't think it helps anyone. If someone hears your movie and they think it's like a ripoff of something else, that doesn't help anyone.
that's got to be a horrible feeling, like having somebody put you in a box where you know you're going to like sound hacky and it's not going to sound unoriginal.
But sometimes, I mean, some people, you get to a point where it's like, all right, you're either going to get fired or you got to give them what they want, you know, right. And that's tough.
Yeah, it's rough. Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, because your reputation's on the line too sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I always get, you know, sometimes you read a review of something and a reviewer will say something and you don't know the people who made those choices. They may have been forced to make that choice.
Right. And,
you know, not even music, but anyone who does anything on a film, you know, the reviews are pretty brutal sometimes. And it's like, they don't know how it ended up where it was, because there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen on these things.
It's interesting how brutal those can be, like when it's difficult to put something like that together.
Yeah.
Somebody just shitting on something that you've worked so hard on.
It's such a bummer. Yeah, yeah. I mean, but that's part of the gig, I guess. Yeah. You gotta have a thick skin. And I don't know, like, you know, when you got done, if you gave it your all and you did your best and you really feel proud of it, then if some reviewer rips it apart, then if you phoned it in, that's one thing, you know, but feel like you did everything, then you can't please everyone. And I think if you please everyone, then you're going to please no one. You're never going to make everyone happy.
You did mention about a lot of cooks in the kitchen. Do you have a lot of issues with, like, the director wants it one way, and then producers want another way, then the studio wants it another way, or it's like kind of like they're more unified?
Sometimes, yeah, you get in a situation where producer wants one thing, the director wants one thing, and they're so diametrically opposite that there's no way you're giving them both. So, like, I got some stories on some of them, but I did this movie, this was a while ago, but the director was Roland Joffe, who's like a famous, he did The Mission, for God's sakes. He worked with Ennio Morricone, like, genius guy. So I was so psyched to get this movie, and he's such a cool guy, and it was super creative. But then there were these producers that saw it as a totally different movie, and unbeknownst to me, they weren't talking about these things. So, like, I'd be doing certain scenes one way and certain scenes other way. And we got to the final dub, and I thought there was going to be like a fist fight, and I thought I was going to get thrown out. Like, they hadn't told each other what they had me doing. It was a disaster. Oh, yeah. So trying to make everyone happy, I made no one happy, you know? So it sucks. It's just, sometimes it's unwinnable. Sometimes the politics are rough. Sometimes they're great. And the sad thing is, it's a lot of times it's just communication. It's just ego. It's worse because of the pandemic and all the Zooms and all this crap. Easy for someone to say jackass things through emails. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of times you're getting emails from people you never met, just ripping this stuff apart. I'm like, you would not say that if you're sitting on the couch behind me, you know? So in the old days, everyone would be in the room, and it was more like on the same team. Yeah, so that changed things for the worse a little bit. It's part of the gig, so you got to just deal with it and navigate it the best you can.
Do you find it harder to discern what people want through emails?
Yes, and sometimes they give notes. I think people have short attention spans, so they give notes like in a bubble. When you're making the music for like a show or a movie, you know, a lot of times it's little cues like a piece of the whole, but they'll focus on like this one scene. Like, say this scene is a, you know, someone running down the street. If the music's slow there and they're just looking at that scene, they're going to say, oh, that music's too slow here. Whereas if you watch the whole thing, that slow is like, it means something else. It doesn't mean what you're seeing. It's telling something else as a part of the story. But if they're not looking at the whole story, then they're just looking at that. Music a lot of times is more effective when it's not telling you what you're already seeing, because you're already seeing it. You know, you don't need to reiterate it, you know?
You can add extra information.
Yeah, like you can be looking at someone walking, but if you did this certain piece of music that takes you, it reminds you of another person, you're bringing like another layer of complexity to the story. You're telling the story that can be done. But if someone's just looking at that and saying, that music's not helping that, well, no, it's not. But so that's hard.
That's interesting. Like, that's a whole nother dimension of communication breakdown, because you can't be sure of the context with which they're critiquing your work.
Yeah.
That's gotta be, it's difficult.
And a lot of times it's not very wordy. So they'll, you know, you get a four word
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, it's slow.
Yeah, it's like, what does that mean? Yeah, do I change one bar? Do I throw the whole thing out? And then a lot, you know, so it sucks. Like it's hard. And like a lot of times you get it from one person and then you get another set of notes from another person. But I'm like, did these people talk to each other? Like, again, like I feel like the whole dynamic of everything has changed a little too. Like when I started, like the director was the captain of the ship. He's the boss or she's the boss. They would be the final say. And I feel now on some films, like the producers just use the director to film the stuff. So they get their thing. After the director's cut, then producers sometimes are like kids in the candy store. You know, now they want to make the movie they want to make.
They usually change the movie quite a bit from the director's initial vision of it as well.
Yeah, yeah. It's really weird. Yeah, you know, so I don't think it's for the better. And the best is when everyone's on the same team because they're all trying to make the best thing. It sucks sometimes when the politics and people aren't communicating or they don't want to be confrontational. So it's easier to pin something on me and make me kind of fall on a grave for them, you know what I mean? But yeah, it's weird. It's a lot easier when everyone's in the same room. Like on film, sometimes, you know, you get 10 people in the room, but it's good because everyone will say the things and they'll talk about what the other person's saying. And then we'll kind of all kind of meld together.
It's so much of communication is nonverbal too, you know, like the majority of it, that's gotta be tough.
Yeah. You can read someone's just their tone of voice or their, right. the way they're just their body language. Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like that information is so much more important, especially when you're building something that's trying to evoke emotion in people, you know?
Yeah. They could say, I'm not feeling this here. I wanted to be scared here, but I feel it's too sweet or too tense, but not, you know, whatever. But there's all those comments are give you a lot to kind of to do. And then you can say the next time, I'm like, I know you weren't feeling scared enough here. So I made it less tense and more, you know what I mean? And then you send it back to them. And then they're like, yeah, I was right. You know, like, yeah.
And the actual like putting the scenes together, like when you're, let's say if like a feature film composing the music for like certain acts, or are you doing it all at once? Like how's that like actually structured?
Yeah, in a film, you usually don't get involved till it's later. So they'll usually have it called an assembly cut. So it's a cut of the whole movie. It still may be changing. And then what you do, we'll all get in the room. It's called a spotting session where we'll watch the movie. They'll tell you where they think their music should be. From 1 minute to 1:30, we think music is here. So we'll all kind of agree on where the music is, what it should be doing, what they want you to feel here, what didn't come through so much in filming. You know, sometimes there's like scenes that they didn't turn out quite the way they wanted them to. So we got to do stuff with music to try to overcompensate for that. But it's cool. I mean, because you're all kind of talking through this. So you talk through the whole film pretty much. So we get this list of spotting notes and then I go to do my thing. And
With a lot of the film scores, like, you know, it seems like there's maybe one or two themes that continue to be revisited or like repackaged in different ways and things like that. Is that core to film scoring, or are there times where you're kind of composing something in an isolated way for a scene, or is it most, do you kind of like stick to themes like throughout?
For me, I'm super old fashioned and I like themes and melodies. And like, there's kind of been a period in movies where that hasn't been quite so popular, where like they find it's like corny or old fashioned. Sometimes if there's a hummable tune, you know, from, which is weird to me.
That's weird. I find that weird too.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, sometimes they don't want Indiana Jones. They don't want that super hummable tune. It's more textural. It's more, it works a lot of times, but I don't love to do that as much. So I kind of get myself in trouble sometimes by trying to be too melodic or thematic. Yeah. That's just what I like.
There's kind of emotions and then there's like the structure. Like you don't always have to have one without the other, right?
Yeah, I mean, and there's been some scores in the last that are not melodic, but you still know as soon as you hear that's right. That's that movie. There's so many of them, but like Sicario, I would love that one. But there was, when you heard that low growling thing, like you knew what movie you're in, you know what's happening, you know, like, so there's ways to do it without just being particularly tuneful, but still like identifiable. I guess that's the thing, is just having like having something to the movie that's unique to it, that reminds you of it if you hear it away from the movie. And I find that's hard sometimes on thrillers and stuff where there's so much music that it's just action just becomes this wall of drums and hard to determine which movie is which, you know, but.
No, from a composer standpoint, like with music, because like obviously you're not making like all the music they put in films sometimes to tie in like a pop hit or like are you adding that music in, or are they telling you like add this music in? Like how's that structured? Like, are you involved in any of that?
The songs, that's
completely different.
The person called music supervisor that usually And we're all kind of on the same team, but they're more picking the songs. And a lot of times the songs are in the script, or the director has an idea for a song he wants somewhere. Sometimes it's not, and the music supervisor is picking all of them. Usually it's a little bit of both. But yeah, I mean, they're definitely thought out for sure, as far as, especially if it's something identifiable. But I don't have anything to do with the songs that go in.
Gotcha. And do you ever have like tension with like the music supervisor and like the stuff you're trying to do and the stuff they're trying to like push into the movie or show?
No, not usually. No? They're all pretty cool. Yeah, no, they're, you know, the hardest thing, you know, music supervisors are they're tastemakers and they're up to date on everything that's happening now, you know, so they definitely are hyper aware of the current trends, and you kind of have to win their confidence a little bit too, because the directors and producers seem to really respect their opinion on things. So it's like, yeah, you really have to get the music supervisor to be an ally, or your life could be a lot harder. So no, but there's so many like great people that do that and I get to work with. They're really fun, you know, and they love music more than anyone, so it's cool.
Is that something that you keep in mind when for your work, but like trends and things like that? Like,
probably not as much as I should. I a little bit, but like I think at a certain point, we all have to be kind of a bit of a chameleon a little bit from project to project. But I think at a certain point, you do things that you kind of gravitate to that you like. At this point, there's just certain things I like doing more than others. I don't particularly love synth music, you know, super EDM electronic music. I could probably fake it, and I have a little bit, but there's guys who do it way better than me, and that's like their whole universe. So I figure they'd be a better guy to score something with that kind of score than I would. So, you know, I really like using acoustic instruments, so that's kind of my thing. And I figure that that's within the framework of what you're working on. You still have to do stuff that you enjoy, that you feel, you know, that makes you feel something. So for me, that's what I like.
And do you turn down projects because they're looking for like more of like an EDM type sound, or you're like, I'm not going to work out for you? Or do they kind of just weed you out like during the actual like interview process?
Yeah, no, I don't turn down too much. Okay.
So you're able to fake it though, like we're like if they were like,
yeah, I mean, well, oddly enough, CS on Miami was pretty electronic, but, yeah. You know, for not being my thing. No, I don't think I get a call for something that's like totally not what I. You always like to push yourself. You get a call for something that's kind of out of your comfort zone, that's always fun. There's certain things that I wouldn't probably be the best choice at, for sure. You know, if it was a straight up jazz score, that's probably not me.
And that's the thing. Like, I feel like at least maybe for like the composer side, it's fairly cutthroat, because there's like with movies, there's lots of actors, there's lots of sound. Like there's like a lot of positions, but there's usually one composer.
Yeah. You go to the wrap party on something and you're like, oh my God, there's like 300 people here. I know like four of them, you know, but yeah, it's like, oh my God, there's only one of me. Yeah. I always get this moment of panic. Oh my God, what if I get sick or something, you know, because like there's a lot of people that are riding on. Yeah. I try not to think about that because I'll have a nervous breakdown. I mean, it's cutthroat. Yeah. I mean, I guess so. Yeah. I don't think about it that way. I try to like, I mean, we're all competitive, you know, and you want to. Mm-hmm. You know, you want you to get your due.
It's a job. I mean, like you're doing to make money at the end of the day. Like,
yeah, but for me, I find, and maybe it's just getting older or being around, I try to like be happy for other people's success more than I used to be in the beginning, you know, instead of being jealous. It's just wasted energy.
Yeah.
It's not like if someone else had success on something, they took it from me, you know, like that's their time. And it's like, we all get our moments. And so I just find it's a better way to live for me, to just try to be happy for other people's victories and enjoy the ones we all get sometimes. And when I first started, I was super like jealous and all the things you're not supposed to be like, oh God, he did that. What? That's terrible. You know, like it's just terrible way to live. And it's not a competition. Like, well, we're all in competition, but it's not like someone else got this job. It's not like I was even up for that job or I had any shot in hell of getting it. You know, so it's like, bravo to them, you know, good job. And, you know, hopefully I get one sometime, you know?
And the actual like audition process, like, is it like open calls for like composers, or like, do you work with like an agent? Like how do you actually like get work?
Yeah, I have an agent. Yeah. I mean, a lot of times at this point on like the bigger stuff, it's like, they'll call the agents. They'll be like first, if you have a relationship with someone, that's the best case, you know, like you worked with someone before and they called you, that's the dream, but that doesn't happen. Yeah. So usually like an agent will get the call and they'll be like, Netflix has this new show. It's about this. We're looking for people. Can you send over reels or credits. They call it reel when we put like a batch of a demo together, basically. So sometimes I'll ask for that. Sometimes I'll just ask for your credit list. Sometimes they might call and ask for you particular. They'll say, we want to get some of Jeff on the show. And then so, you know, in the old days, you'd send a CD and we'd have to courier around town. You'd have to call a courier and they pay it up. But these days it's like I use Dropbox, you know, they'll just say, send a link. So I'll put a folder with 10 pieces of music in it in Dropbox that I think are, you know, they'll usually tell you what the sound is or what they're looking for or what. If I don't have something specific, I'll usually stay up the night before and try to write one or two pieces of music that are kind of right what they're looking for, or at least what I think they're looking for. And then you send it in, you know, and sometimes you'll get a meeting. Sometimes you'll never hear another word again, which is like 90% of the time, those things you never hear. And that's just it's just the numbers game, you know, but sometimes you just get a meeting from that thing and there might be four people they meet with and maybe you get hired. Sometimes they'll call back and they say, we want to have Jeff demo. So then they'll send you a couple scenes and they'll have you actually write to picture, which I like to do because that gives you a better shot. At that point, you have as much a shot as anyone else who's getting to do that. If you don't get it, then yours wasn't as good as theirs, or it wasn't right. And the weird thing too is like if I got to demo on a show, you have to ask, am I going to play it safe? Am I going to do what I think the safe thing is? Is it going to get me the job, or am I going to like do something wacky that might get their attention, but might get you thrown out, you know? So it's always a tough call, you know? And I had that happen recently. There's this new Netflix show and I read the script and I saw it and I was like, and they kept saying it wasn't, it should be funny. And I was like, it's not funny. The characters are kind of funny, but the music shouldn't be funny. So I played it super straight and they liked it, but I didn't get the job because the people who did it played it comedically. And I think that was the wrong choice. I wouldn't have wanted to do it that way comedically. So I wasn't the right person.
You mentioned in the beginning that that you didn't have a lot of kind of stock recording stuff. So do you have kind of a bunch of stock recordings, that stuff that you use to put things together when like in a crunch?
I mean, now I have so many other films or things that I've done. So I will just go through that and say like, all right, this movie is a drama. So they're looking for strings or guitars. And then I'll be like, oh, I did something. I know there's two cues from there that might work. And so I kind of just call through my stuff. That's what I'll usually most of the time, like unless it's something really out there, I usually have something that's in the universe or what they're looking for. So I'll pull like 9 things out of what I already did. And then I'll write one thing specific for it. But it's just, you never know who listens to what or how much they listen to or if they listen. It's just, as soon as I hit send, I don't think about it ever again. A lot of times if you don't get called back or whatever, like you just, it's not like they say, no, we're passing, or you didn't get it. They just don't say anything. So a lot of times you're waiting around. And so I usually am busy with other stuff. So I just don't even think about it. You know, it's like, it's in the universe. If it comes back, cool. If it doesn't, I'm not sitting by the phone waiting to see if I got that job. Or if they're going to call back, because that's the worst.
Checking your phone line every few minutes.
Yeah, like, that's the worst. Like when you're super desperate for that, like it's just like finding a girl, you know? It's like if you're super needy and you're looking for it, you never find it. You know, it's like when you're not trying is when that stuff happens. If it comes back, cool. If it doesn't. So in the beginning, it was just having enough music to pull from to represent yourself.
You said you usually get involved like more in the later portion of the actual like film or show. How much time are you given? Like, say they bring you on and they're like, let's score the music for this. Like, are you given like a weekend? Is it a few months? Like, what's the time frame?
I mean, it depends. Like, films, yeah. You get a lot longer. You know, TV is quick. You know, so like if you get on a show, sometimes you'll get the episode on Tuesday. It's all kind of changed since the pandemic, but usually you'd get like a week.
Okay.
Depending, half hour show, you might get a little bit less time, but an hour show, usually a week. So like you might meet with everyone on a Tuesday, spot the show, figure out where all the music's going, where they want it to be. And then maybe like the following Monday, you'd have to turn it in. And then you might get notes. I got super lucky, like, because then there's notes, there's revisions, which goes back to all we were talking about before. Sometimes on a TV show, the notes kind of get less as you get into it, because TV, it moves so quickly, you know, like they're shooting an episode, they're editing 2 episodes, and they don't have time to get super picky about it. After they're confident. But when I did CSI Miami, we never previewed anything. We would literally send it to the stage, to the mix, which that has literally never happened to me since. I didn't realize how good we had it. Like they didn't preview it before. We didn't get notes. I just sent it in and they finished the show. Sometimes we get like one note from the actual dub. Well, but you wouldn't get these pages of notes that I get now sometimes, where it's like, it's a lot. So, on some shows, oddly, again, the comedies are much worse with the notes. But getting involved early is like the ideal scenario. And like I did a couple shows over the pandemic when everything was locked down, where we had a lot of time. I did this show, it's on Stars, it's called Heels. It's about wrestling. It's a drama. And I wrote all of the music while they were filming without seeing a frame of it. I just did it from the script. And I had never done that before, but when they started cutting it in, it all worked. And it was cool. That was a really fun way to do it.
And when you're actually like scoring stuff, do you like rely heavily on the script, or are you just kind of taking like more visual cues?
Yeah, no. By the time you start working, it's usually not script anymore, because like stuff can change from what you read to what it actually ends up looking like. Mm-hmm. A lot of times you'll read a script and you'll have an idea of what this would be, but then you see what it looks like and you realize you were totally wrong. Like what I thought it was going to be is not. You know, sometimes you don't know the character, you don't know the cast, what they look like, and they may look different in your head, or the setting, or how bright it is, you know, if it's like light out, or if it's like a super dark looking thing, you know, all that kind of informs what the music would be like. So it's once they start filming, it's all informed by what you're seeing, not the script anymore.
And you mentioned comedies are like harder. What would you say is the easiest then to score?
I don't know. I don't know anything's easy. Yeah, nothing.
Fair enough.
Well, I find like on dramas or things that are a little, they're not so focused on like every few seconds. Like comedy stuff could change really quickly, or someone could walk across a room and the way they turn, like timing has a lot to do with comedy. Whereas in a drama, it's more like the mood sometimes. So it's not changing so much as a comedy might. So in that respect, I think that's easier.
Do you find that in this like medium, there's enough variance to continue to grow as an artist, or do you feel like you get stuck in a rut sometimes because like you're seeing the same kinds of scripts, same kinds of situations?
That's an interesting question. No, I've never felt like stuck in a rut. I feel like it's super exciting, you know, because everyone is different. And even something that's in the same genre, something else you did, like there's so many factors in what it ends up looking like or feeling like, or you know. So no, it's all, everything's different. No.
Even like a show like CSI, I feel like every episode kind of feels the same to some extent. Like it doesn't get like repetitive, or are you able to like deviate and mix it up a little bit?
Yeah, no, I don't know. I still like it. It doesn't get boring. The weird thing about CSI was like every summer the producers would see like a new movie that was out, and it would be like, all right, next year, we just saw The Bourne Identity. That was really cool. Or like, we just saw Friday Night Lights. Like, we should do stuff, you know? So if you go through the seasons of CSI, like, I think it changed a lot season to season, which was cool. Like, it kept it interesting, which some shows don't. I don't know. I mean, all I ever wanted to be able to do was sit in a room like this and make music all day. So I never, like, take it for granted. Or if I sit here and say, like, oh, I'm repeating myself. I got to like smack myself and be like, you're pretty lucky to get to do what you get to do, you know? So stop complaining.
And do you have a preference between like TV and film?
No, that's changed so much too. Like it used to be there were the film guys and there were the TV guys and there was no crossover.
Okay.
Now it's like the Wild West, like especially with streaming now. So it is. No, I like streaming because you don't have like commercial breaks and you don't have stuff like that. Like I like the pace of TV. I like that you don't have too much time to overthink things. And I like the immediacy, like, all right, next week I'm going to have a different episode. So you're not going to get hung up on something for 6 months. The one thing I don't like about TV is like there's cues sometimes when you come in from a commercial or go out to a commercial, all these little short cues that you have to do. They're called play-ons or playoffs. So little things like that, little transitional things, I don't really like to do them. So that's a downside of TV. But now with streaming, you don't have to do that because there's no commercials. So you can score it more like a film a little bit. I like films because you have more time. So you can really kind of really craft it a little bit more, really make it feel like a piece of a whole, like, you know, every cue is a piece of the bigger puzzle, you know, and I like taking the time on that. And I like you get to use an orchestra a lot of times more on film than TV. So that's rewarding and it's fun. But the downside of film is like, there's more people with opinions and everything gets way more thought out. So that's sometimes a drag. So I kind of like them both equally. Fun to do both. I'm doing some films right now and it's great. I always thought film was what I wanted to do. That was my goal when I started. So CSI kind of threw that for a loop in a good way.
Are you able to work on multiple projects at like the same time, or you have to kind of focus at one thing at a time?
No, I do multiple all the time. I don't have a team of people. It's just me. I don't have assistants. I don't have ghostwriters. I have an engineer. I have an orchestrator, but I don't have people writing my music. There's like a lot of like teams now that.
Oh, really?
A lot of guys have a lot of guys doing it. And it's great, but I just don't like doing that. Just because it took me so many years to be able to get to write music for a gig. Like, that's what I like to do. I'm not a good businessman. I'm not a good manager, you know? So that's not for me.
There have been a lot of like kind of technological advancements that I feel like have kind of lowered the barrier to entry. How have those things, you know, like Rock Band, things like that, kind of changed the composing industry?
Yeah, I mean, it surely makes it. Yeah, you need way less money to get in the game. You know, you need a laptop pretty much at this point. Yeah, so it's made a lot of more people be able to try to take a shot at it. And I think also coinciding with like kind of the record business being all screwed up and harder to make a living, that I think some people from that side are now trying to get into this. And so, yeah, the barrier to entry is super low. And there's a lot of schools now too. You know, there's so many colleges that offer programs in this. So they're churning out these people. It's not like a normal job. It's not like you go and like, if you got your degree in this, you go open a classified ad and apply for a job. It's hard. Like there's no straight pathway to success or to getting your foot in the door. Yeah. But the technology stuff for sure, it's made it easier. I mean, I like real instruments and I like the imperfections of real instruments. And so I think that there's a lot of kind of keyboard warriors out there that just do everything in the box. They just, all the sounds are from libraries or other people made them for them. So I find stuff sounds a little homogenized that way. Like everyone kind of sounds like everyone else. So
robotic in a sense.
Yeah. You know, like I like when you listen to Led Zeppelin and you hear the guitar squeak. So it's like the imperfection of those recordings over time are what really bring them to life.
It's not just music as well. Like I know we talked to artists before, and that's one of the things I don't really care about, like a lot of digital art and all, because like it's too perfect. It doesn't look right as well. So yeah, it's interesting. It's the same.
I mean, the human element is what they'll hopefully never replace with all the technology. Is insane, and I'm terrified to see where it's going to be 10 years from now. You know, I mean, can you imagine watching the news or whatever pretty soon with all the deep fake stuff? Like, I mean, we're in crazy town now, but it's going to be even worse. Like, but I think it's the human, I don't know. I don't know if it's naive to say that that'll never be replaced by a machine, but I hope not.
Do you feel like the quality of the work has been negatively affected by these? Because it seems like before you had to prove yourself, and you might have had to be at a much higher level skill level to like break through. You got a lot more people exploring ideas, so there might be more diversity there. But like, has the quality dropped because of that?
I don't think so. I think I'd sound like an old fogey if I said yes. You know, I think that I've heard some stuff by these young 21-year-olds that just blows your mind. You know, I've had
that's cool. That's good to hear.
I mean, just listen to like Billie Eilish or her brother. He did all this stuff on a laptop, and it's like genius production. It's not the laptop that made that good. He's really good, and he's creative, and he used the tools to come up with something that no one else did. I think that in any aspect of this, we all have to kind of evolve with the times to kind of keep growing and following what's new. Even if we're not, you know, there's like programs like Ableton and stuff that all these young DJ people use, but they do some crazy creative stuff that I could not do. Answer your question. I don't think there's unqualified people. I think there's super creative people doing really cool stuff.
That's cool. So it sounds like it's a benefit then.
Yeah, it pushes you. It pushes all of us. I mean, it would be boring if it was like, oh, you have to be able to write music that sounds like John Williams. And then that's the problem. We all got there. And it's like, that's one solution. Could be a totally different way that John Williams wouldn't think of, that some 21-year-old kid that's a genius with Ableton and recorded his banging on his table with a pencil. That's really cool. You know, like there's all kinds of ways to be creative.
I've always thought about that. Like especially with popular music, you see a lot of the same themes like visited over and over again, you know, and I was thinking that, you know, it's possible that there's a certain type of person that gets into that. And so like they might have a certain type of perspective, but there's all of these other perspectives that exist in society that may never actually pick up some kind of creative art that don't end up getting expressed in those artistic mediums. You know, so I feel like when you lower the barrier to entry, there's a lot more potential ideas to get explored.
Yeah. I mean, look at digital photographers, there's still great art being made, or even digital film or like people making cool movies on iPhones. The tools are only so much. Like, yeah, now you can't, as a tool, like the lack of money is an excuse. Now it's like lack of creativity or lack of trying, you know, or putting in the time. I think that's the biggest thing with art. And that's the only problem I have with some stuff today is I feel like everyone, because of Instagram and everyone wants to be famous overnight. But I think any art, whatever the medium, it's a lot of time just working on your art and creativity and experimenting. And that doesn't come with immediate rewards. It might take time. You might be dead before someone discovers something that some great artist did. But that doesn't mean it shouldn't be done. That's the only thing that I don't like about society now, that there's so many shortcuts to success, whatever that is. Not even as an artist, but as like a popular human being in the internet culture. What does that really amount to at the end of it?
Yeah, I'm curious, like a lot of these kids, like in 10 years from now, like after like the Instagram stuff fades away, like where are they left with?
Yeah, I mean, well, some of them will be left with a lot of money in the bank.
Yeah, millions of dollars.
Yeah, so there's good and bad in all of it. I don't really concern myself with it too much. There's no point.
You did mention when you're working on television, you're able to like kind of move forward on the next episode. Now you don't really dwell on the current episode you're working on too much. Is that something you experience a lot where you kind of like dwell and like do a lot of revisions on your work, or are you never really happy with it?
Well, it's not necessarily me that's making the revisions. No, the biggest for me right now at this point in time, the biggest difference from film to TV is that TV, I can go in for dinner and not think about it till tomorrow. But a film is just in your head constantly. It's just there. You can't turn it off. Like you're just constantly always thinking. Like a TV show, I can do an episode in a few days and it's gone. And then you wait a few days and you're on to the next one. Like my wife, when there's a film, she's like, yeah, I'll see you in 2 months, you know, because like even when you're there, you're not there because it's just a thing. I like it, but it definitely makes you not a good balanced human being. You know what I mean? So yeah, at least I haven't figured out how, but it's just, you know, it's stressful and you're constantly thinking about all these 30 to 40 pieces of music on a film a lot of times. So they're all just not done, you know, version upon version. It's all just kind of going through your head, and then you'll read an email and get, you're feeling good. And then you get an email and you get the comments like, I was just feeling really good till 5 seconds ago. Now I'm just going to have a panic attack because everything I was feeling good about is now thrown into chaos. If I wanted like balance and a happy life, I would just do TV.
Do you ever get blocked on like creating things?
No, thank God. That's terrified if that ever happened. Because I mean, honestly, I think one of the things about this job is you just have to be an improviser. You just have to kind of go with your first instinct and just, that's usually the best. You can't overthink. Because I got a lot of friends who are like songwriters and stuff, and they, you know, they can get hung up on a song for months, you know, and you can't do that in this because you got 20 other pieces of music to do. So you kind of just got to go with your gut. But I find that's kind of fun because you just go with your first instinct.
It probably gives you an opportunity to get better because you're pumping stuff out all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like with like a feature film and all, I know it's like they're kind of drawn out. It does take a while. Like, is there a point in the feature film where you kind of submit everything, you know, you're done and like you don't really have to worry about it anymore? Or is it up until like the movie actually gets like released, already making changes?
Well, no, it's usually like the last day of the dub. So the final, when they mix the film, when they put all the new dialogue and put all the music and dialogue and sound effects together, that's called the dub. Like if you make it to the dub, you're in pretty good shape and it's done. Like that's usually the end. So yeah, that is the goal.
Have you ever finished a film and you're watching it and you have like a new idea that could have been better and you're like, man, I wish I would have put that in.
Yeah.
I mean, you might go back to like with producers, they might have told you to do something different than what you would like to do.
Yeah. You always think you could do things better, but sometimes like time is cool. Like you see something you did a couple of years ago and you're like, oh, that, I don't cringe when that came on. That's okay. Like that's all right. That's all I can ask for.
And is it hard to watch like other like movies and not critique it? Like, oh, I would have done this way.
It's terrible.
Can't turn it off.
Yeah. It's worse in this town because like sometimes you'll have demoed on something and then you see the billboard and you didn't get it and you know who got it and you're pissed.
Actors do the same thing. It's funny.
It's horrible. It's just constant. You can't drive down the street without getting punched in the face. Like you failed on that. Like I know who got that. Like, damn it. Yeah. It's hard. But again, I think like I've kind of gotten to a point being happy for other people. And I tend to watch stuff is not necessarily in the genres that I do. Watch a lot of dark, horror-y kind of stuff. So it's not like I would have been doing, because I always think about that too. Like, it'd be really hard to do horror movies, like, and be looking, like, I like watching them, but like making music for that all day would be really tough, be in that headspace 24/7.
Yeah, because you just have to keep rewatching those scenes like over and over again. At least the comedy, you're laughing the time. Yeah. It's probably fun.
Yeah.
Unless you get tired of the joke, like, oh my God, right there, just joke one more time.
No. Comedy's fun in that way.
What about non-music stuff in the industry? Have you looked into like possibly directing or writing or doing any of that kind of stuff? Or are you just pretty locked into music?
No, I'm pretty, this is it. This is what I do.
Yeah.
They don't need another crappy director, you know, especially a middle-aged white dude that's not really in high demand right now for directors. Yeah. No, I honestly, like, yeah, this isn't, some people like want something else. This is all I ever kind of wanted. I love doing this. It's the greatest job for me. I'm good with this. I hope to get to do it for a lot longer.
Do you continually like come across situations where you have to learn new instruments or you end up wanting to buy a certain thing? Or
yeah, sometimes you buy like a new, like if you're doing something, you might want to get like a new sound or something. I have a lot of instruments like that I play okay, or some really bad, but sometimes like playing something bad is kind of cool. Like I have a banjo, but I never play it like dueling banjos, like that. I might play it with a pick or hit it with like a mallet, or, you know, like to make something unique sounding. I use that more, like trying to use things in a weird way. I have an upright bass, or I play it terribly, but like, it's kind of cool what I do. If I want someone who I want to play legit, I'll hire someone that can play it legit. Yeah. I always just try to make things sound a little crappy. You know, with all this computer stuff, you can get the best drum sound on earth in your computer. Then it sounds like everyone else and everyone else. I live to make things sound not so good, because I think that's the only way it sounds like.
That's the name of your book.
To you, yeah, you know.
Mediocre mastery.
Yeah.
What about any dream franchises? Any in particular movie or show you're like dying to be on?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. I mean, it's harder to answer that now knowing the realities of this business. And like, it would be cool to do a Marvel thing, but I know that's not happening. I don't know. If I had like my ideal career path, I'd like to do like mid, low budget indie movies, that art housey kind of movies that sometimes win awards, you know, like The King's Speech. You get to use a small orchestra. I think you can do music for movies like that people notice. Cause like even on like a Marvel movie or something, like they're all kind of, there's parameters that they all have to work in, you know? So they all kind of sound like they're in the same universe cause they are, you know. That would be hard. Whereas I think they can be a little more different on something smaller, at least.
In a Marvel movie, you'll have a lot of people like critiquing you. Like there's probably like three times as many producers on a Marvel movie.
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, those things have become such behemoths, you know, so much money riding on them that I don't necessarily think that'd be any fun. Hans and like four other people are doing all them, and that's fine, you know? So, but I think for me, just the thing that has been elusive is trying to get that one film that really just resonates with, you feel like you did something really good, but also like critically kind of breaks through. That's the thing that's been elusive to me a little bit, is like, you don't want to be recognized, but you want to be recognized by your peers. You know, you want to do something that's not just commerce. It's not just working, but it's like something that somehow resonates like critically. Like Moonlight, or, you know, like a small indie that really broke through. That would be like my dream kind of turn to take.
Have you gotten close to that yet, or you feel like you've gotten it, or are you still like a while away?
I don't.
Still chasing the magnum opus?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't met my Tim Burton. I've worked with a lot of different people, you know, but like, I haven't had that one director that kind of like ridden each other's coattails up. And that's hard to find. So I don't know. Yeah, I've done some movies that I thought were going to do better than they did. I did this little indie a few years ago. It was called The Confirmation. The guy who directed it, Bob Nelson, won an Oscar for Nebraska. So it was like one of those critically acclaimed indies. I was super psyched to work with them. Had a really good cast. It was a good movie, but it didn't break through. It got really good reviews, but it didn't break through the way I had hoped. But you just don't know. But that doesn't change. Like, I was super proud of it. I was super proud of the work. And that's kind of all you can do. All the rest of it's kind of out of your hands. And that's fine.
We usually ask one last question of our guests. Any aspiring words that you wish you would have got when you first started in the entertainment industry? Something you wish you would have got?
Just don't listen to what anyone says. It's not a job. It's kind of like a life choice. And it's like something that if you have to do it, like if you can wake up and do something else and do music to like make you happy at night, then you should do something else, because this, if you can't kind of dip one foot in the pool on this. It's kind of a life choice of a lot of struggle to kind of get going, and it's not conventional. And so you're going to have a lot of people telling you reasons not to do something, or what you should do, or what, you know, like why you should do something else, or why you should play it safe or do this. And if any of those options sound good to you, then I think you should do something else, because it's kind of 100% all in life choice. And, you know, you sacrifice vacations and you sacrifice friendship sometimes, or marriages or relationships. Like it takes a lot of time, you know, it's worth it, but it's, I think it has to be something that you have to do, not that you might be cool to do. I don't think it works that way. But that being said, it's the greatest job for me that I could have ever imagined doing. You're constantly growing, you're constantly learning, you're constantly trying to be a better musician. And that's pretty cool. Waking up every day is different than the last.
Do you see a lot of burnout in the industry, or a lot of guys are only in it for so long and they do other things?
Yeah, I think there's guys who get in it for the wrong reasons. I think some people get blinded by money. I never thought you could make any money doing this. I never knew that money was an option. So it was like, it was a happy surprise, but it was never a driving factor for me. And even now, like I'll do a film that has terrible budget, but I don't care. Like that's not why we do it, for money. You know, sometimes some of them you get paid, sometimes you don't. But I think the guys who got in it for money sometimes end up not writing their own music and not taking value, not taking pleasure in writing. You know, they take pleasure in cashing the checks. And then when something happens, the checks aren't as big as they used to be, and they get pissed and they get bitter. And I think there's some people who get like that. Sure. I don't think people are burned out if their career is moving forward. It's hard, you know? I mean, we all want to get places. We all want things we don't have. But for me, I think it's just, you got to stay in the game. You got to be on the bench. You got to be ready when the coach calls your number, you know? So you can't get that if you're here for the wrong reasons. You can't get that if you leave town too soon, if you give up too soon, or if it's too hard. Because if you quit, you're out.
Probably don't get good enough if you're not actually focused on the work and you're focused on something else anyway.
Yeah, you might get lucky in the short term, you know, like some people come and blow into town and get lucky on their first film and they had something that went to Sundance and really did good. But look at the Oscars. I mean, you can look at the last like 10 years, there's been some Oscars, the scores that won Oscars that you've never heard from that person again. It's weird. It's boggling. You know, I don't know why it happens or why it doesn't happen, you know, but it's a weird business, man. Like, there's no like rungs on the ladder. There's no corporate ladder. You know, it's like you might get to one rung and then someone ripped the rung out above you and then you fall back. There's no place where you're ever, for, at least for me, where you're like, it's comfortable now. I'm here. Like it's, you just never know where it's going to go. That's okay. That's fun.
Jeff, it's been an absolute blast having you on our podcast. I really do appreciate talking to you tonight.
Yeah, definitely, man.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on.
Where can our listeners find more of you and your work?
Well, I'm a social media idiot, so I'm terrible at that. So yeah, I think I'm on Instagram or my website.
I know you're on Spotify as well. You have a Spotify channel.
Yeah, Spotify and Apple Music and stuff. Yeah, I got some new ones coming out. Yeah, I got this show called Ghosts on CBS, which turned out to be like the number one new show of the season somehow. That's really fun comedy. That's cool. I got the second season of Heels coming out on Stars that we're just starting to work on. The theme song for that I'm super proud of. I did with Ben Bridwell from Band of Horses. So check that out. I got a movie called Me Time coming out for Netflix in August with Mark Wahlberg and Kevin Hart.
Oh, nice.
Directed by the guy who did Meet the Parents, Meet the Fockers.
So okay. Be a fun one.
It's a good one. I got a movie called Players coming out for Netflix. My friend Trish C. directed, who directed Pitch Perfect. I got a show for Apple. I think it's going to be called Strange Circuits. It's like a sci-fi anthology, which is really cool. We've been recording an orchestra in Budapest for that. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's coming out in November.
You're a very busy man.
Yeah.
Lucky.
All right, Jeff. We do appreciate talking tonight, man.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks so much. Talk soon.
Yeah, I'm really glad he's our first musician.
Yeah, that was cool, man.
I'm surprised you didn't nerd out with him on the music stuff. I was actually able to follow most of it. I'm glad you guys didn't go into music theory.
I wanted to ask more about like the emotion stuff, but the moment kind of passed. So
yeah, there was a couple that I didn't feel right to circle back to.
Right
stuff I wanted to find out more about. It's interesting that process, because like we haven't talked to anyone that's done it. So like now like it's adding like another like piece to that puzzle of like how these things are put together and made, because there's so many moving parts with film and TV. The music composition is usually one of those things a lot of people don't really think about. It's like it's there, but like you don't really like think about it, or at least I never really thought about it as much.
Yeah,
I'm sure like someone like you, you might think about it.
Yeah, I've thought about it a bit.
But like music's very important to the show. Like it drives everything. It's weird to like
it's when an you essential, don't have music. It's essential. Yeah. It's kind of like watching some of those mass audience comedies like Big Bang Theory without a laugh track, you know?
Yeah, it's very awkward. It's like, yeah.
His origin story was really cool too.
I always love those. When it's happening, it probably blows, but like looking back at it, because that's the thing, like people always say, like you should never like quit because like you might be like one phone call away. Yeah. From like your big break, and it's really hard, and I definitely understand it because I've quit lots of various things, so I completely understand. If you would have like quit like then and there, instead of going to like that studio where his buddy, yeah, like his whole life would have been different. It's crazy to think about stuff like that. But getting your first gig is like on CSI Miami. That's pretty huge. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah,
I like the way they did the test and all. They didn't have people's names on it. They picked the best work. Yeah, that's awesome.
I like that too.
I don't know if that's a popular thing in the industry. I don't think probably is.
I think it might be. I mean,
it probably depends on what you're doing. Like, I'm sure if like big like features and shit like that, they probably want like a name to attach to it.
The one thing they probably have going for them, and I apologize if this is disrespectful, but I don't think the composers in general are household names to the public. So it might give an opportunity for the work to stand on its own outside of a name, at least for the public facing part of it. Because you got stuff like, you got people like John Williams, but
yeah, like he's like probably like the one that like anyone could like name off the top of their head, or at least they're very familiar with his work. It's not just composers. I mean, there's lots of like people in the industry that do phenomenal work and all, and like we've talked to quite a few of them at this point, but like they're not household names. And if I tell people like, yeah, I talked to so-and-so, and like, who's that? Like, well, he did the visual effects for this movie or something. I'm like, oh yeah, I know that movie kind of thing. Right. Like, yeah, of course you know that movie. Like, it's usually just directors and writers and actors. One of the things that I wanted to ask him, and I didn't, I was curious if he still does like live music, if he still like plays with a band or anything like that. He alluded, I don't think he does because he's so busy with all his other shit. I mean, kind of hard. And the other interesting thing about it with like visual effects and special effects and writers and editors and sound guys, all that, like there's teams of people. Like you look at like these movies, you'll see like a ton of them. And I think it's really cool that there's only one composer. I feel like that shows like the importance of it, where it's like we can only have one person, like they're one person's vision. We can't have like a lot of different people, a lot of different cooks, because there are so many different people giving them suggestions. And
it's really powerful when there's a cohesive theme that, you know, like he was saying, how you can connect like a different person or a different scene. You can you can do like a thematic callback. It's interesting how much of a dimension that like music can add.
Thank you all for listening. If you would like to support the WWSD podcast, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/WWSD_podcast. Make sure you like and subscribe on our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Yeah, much better than we were like 40 minutes ago. So.
Yeah. Or me 10 minutes ago. I almost got like 3 speeding tickets.
we're glad you made it safely home.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.